This is Teddy Teapot with Teddy Mellencamp.
Okay, you guys, welcome to this week's Teddy Teapot. I am super excited because I am going to be co-hosting with my friend, Carissa Culliner. You guys have seen her on E! Daily Pop. She is so fun. She has such a light, amazing personality and super cute kids. We have so much to connect on, especially all the juice. So let's get started. So Carissa, thank you for joining me this week. Like how I had to slide into your DMs. I was like, hey.
Anytime, girl. You're always welcome in my DMs.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to slide into her DMs to see if she can join me on this week's Teddy Teapot. What did you have to do to bribe your kids so that you could do this right now?
Oh, well, you picked a perfect time. This is nap time. So it's not bribing my kids. It's bribing my husband to watch to make sure the kids stay asleep. Oh. So that's how that works. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to have, oh, there's my spark. Hold on. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to make up for it afterwards. I'm sure I'm going to be on dinner duty tonight.
Yeah, that's how it goes. I know my kids came in like probably about 3 minutes before I hopped on and my daughter's like, Mom, you have to come down. You have to see this. And I'm like, what? And it's that the dogs had gotten to a bird. And I'm like, oh. I really had to see this. Dad is downstairs. He could have seen this. He could have been the one to help you with this.
Always, always. I want Mom to do it. I want Mom. It has to be Mom. You're like, no. This is a dog eating a bird. That is Dad's thing.
Dad.
And then they if there's anything that screams more Dad, it's that.
That one. And then they want to really get into the details. Like, do you think the bird just was taking a nap and the dog, I don't know what happened.
Oh man. You're like, and I don't have time to break this down for you right now.
I really don't. I have to go talk about other people's problems.
Most importantly. Yes. No, I totally feel you. It's tough, but yeah, you make this happen and you've got lots of kiddos in the house and they're all different ages. See, luckily my kids are still doing nap time. So I at least have a couple hours of the day that's my saving grace.
Well, we have babies the same age, right? Like how old is your daughter?
Well, Dove is 9 months. Zoe, my daughter, is 9 months. And Dove is what?
11 months.
Yeah. So they're pretty close.
So are you on two naps or what, three naps?
Two naps.
We're on two naps too, but she's ready. It's like she's tapping at the window at like 30 minutes on the second nap. So yeah. I'm like, no, she's almost over. She's almost
but
done.
You got to hold on to it as long as you can.
Because the lunchtime nap, once the world opens back up again, is not an ideal nap.
No.
Because that's, you want to take them out and go to lunch or go on a walk or do those things. And I'm like, no, I like the two nap. The gap, like, come on.
I know. I know. We still have two naps and she's still holding on strong to those. So that's good. And then Chase, I can still take one nap a day, which he's three. So I'm pretty happy
I kept my kids doing it for as long as possible. And then they were in a preschool that like had the nap until kindergarten. I was like, this is a dream.
Yes, exactly.
I love that we're going from kids' nap schedule to cannibalism. I feel like the transition is key.
This feels like Daily Pop.
I have to tell you that I have realized I haven't, like, since everything has happened with Corona and I'm not the world's best sleeper. I go to sleep at like a regular time and then I'm up at like 2 a.m. I've realized I have an insatiable need to investigate during that time.
Well, that's, you know, I was just reading a whole article about that. It's because that time at night is your probably only time to yourself. And so you're like consumed and it keeps you up and you're like looking at other things and you're just like really diving in and you don't want to go to sleep because this is like the only time you have
things. I need to research all of the things. And then I even have a text exchange with Kyle and our other friend, Jen. And it's just a cookie with a detective on it because like, that's where we send all of our crumbs. Like because we can't miss out on anything that's going on. Like I need to know all of the action all of the time, which leads me to the first topic that Teddy Teapot listeners are wanting us to dig into, which is the Army Hammer of it all.
Oh, Army. What's happening with poor Army?
Okay, to catch people up that don't know the backstory, I'm going to just read you something that was just from an Us Weekly article. Army Hammer is no stranger to controversy and backlash, having raised eyebrows for his questionable behavior and comments as far as the early days of his career. DMs, which have not been verified, detailed domineering sexual fantasies ranging from rape to mutilation to cannibalism. Hammer called the screenshots bull, S-H-I-T, in a statement to TMZ, in addition to slamming the vicious and spurious online attacks that caused his name to trend on Twitter for several days straight. So we are going to be bringing on a love, let me look at it exactly. Exactly. Her name's Leela Darvell, and she helps women and men become their most authentic sexual selves.
Oh,
so we can ask her questions in regards.
I love that.
Some of those things.
Can I ask her some personal questions?
I mean, maybe we should dig into that as well. Like, is scheduling sex hot?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, is whenever you're in nasty. Okay, we'll talk about that later. I'm gonna get in.
I need to write this down.
No, I'm thinking like whenever you're like literally feel like you have like baby spit up all over you and breast milk coming out of one nipple, and then you're like trying to be like, but I'm hot, right?
Oh, what? You're not in. But I have. This is the weird thing about men. I've noticed that whenever I like feel my hottest, like my husband never says anything.
Totally.
But whenever I feel like not cute at all, my husband's like, you look just hot today, babe. And I'm like, what?
Story of my life. Like I get all dressed up. I literally came home from, what was the last award show we did something for? People's Choice Awards, I guess. I came home all done up in the gown and everything, and, you know, spent 2.5 hours in hair and makeup. And he's like, doesn't do much for me. I'm like, what the? What? I was like, don't say that. He's like, no, I mean, you look fine, but I mean,
like, who? Eh. And by the way, who wants to look fine?
I know. I'm like, what?
Like, just,
but kind of, yeah,
a little bit. I think that maybe men could also work on compliments, just a touch.
Totally. And then if I'm wearing like literally jeans and a t-shirt and tennis shoes, then it's like, yeah, now let's go out. I want to show you off. And I'm like, what the no, you don't. I want to go hide. I look like crap.
I know. It's
but no.
Total craziness. But what I'm a little bit confused about before we even bring her on, and maybe you know,
yeah,
maybe you guys have covered this in Daily Pop, is how are these DMs starting? Like, if you have a fake DM place where you've started a fake account, how are people believing that it's you?
Well, it's just a lot of people have verified that it's him. And some of these DMs are actually on his Army Hammer handle. I mean, it's not just like a fake Insta, Finsta here that he's using. Like, a lot of them are through his actual Army Hammer. Granted, Photoshop is very easy nowadays, so let's always like say that, you know, benefit of the doubt here. It could be that, you know, there's Photoshop and all these things. And as he says, these are total BS. So I want to keep that, you know, in the clear that it's always a possibility. The situation is that there's a lot of women. When you have a lot of women and they all have very similar stories, you know, things seem to add up, you know, and these are personal encounters. These aren't just DMs. These are relationships he's had in the past. There's ex-girlfriend speaking out. His ex-wife did release a statement, and she, very PC statement, just said basically that she was shocked to find out all of these things, which is kind of saying, yeah, it's probably true, right? To say that she's completely shocked.
I mean, he also did what is this from? From Playboy back from like 7 years ago, he said, I used to like to be a dominant lover. I liked the grabbing of the neck and the hair and all of that. But then you get married and your sexual appetites change.
Mm-hmm. I don't think his changed. He just found it somewhere else. I
know. But do they, but that's what I'm curious about. Oh, good. Leela is in the waiting room, so let's take a little break and then bring her on and start grilling her all of our questions.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I know, we need to ask her.
Yeah.
so excited to bring on Leela. She is a sex and intimacy coach, and obviously we have a lot of questions for her.
How are you, ladies?
We're good. We're loaded with questions already because we started discussing Armie Hammer and he said about that his sexual appetites changed once he got married to his wife. That, you know, he said, for the better, it's not like I'm suffering without it. I mean, you just can't pull your wife's hair. It gets to the point where you say, I respect you too much to do these kinds of things that I want to do.
Yeah, I found that really interesting as well, because you use the word respect. And I would think, you know, in BDSM and kink, that the most paramount thing is actually that you respect who you're with. And it's not a derogatory thing and you're not caring about them. But it is I deal with it a lot in my coaching clients. This, you know, when you get married and you have kids, just this shift that happens in, first of all, for the woman and her own identity, but also how she's viewed by her partner and how she's viewed in society. And I think it really comes down to the fact that, you know, we don't usually see the maternal as being sexy. I was just reflecting on it, actually. Do you remember when the term MILF came out?
Yeah.
Do you remember what was that movie?
Stifler's Mom.
Yeah. Right? And it was like this revelation. It's like, oh my gosh, a mom can be sexy and someone can want to f*** her. someone could want to have sex with her. You know, but like, what about before that? And I think it's a very societal thing, especially in the West, that women who are moms aren't viewed as sexual creatures. And I think that's what we're dealing with as women today when we're trying to fuse our maternal self with our sexual self, rather than being like that just stops as soon as you become a parent. And also that our partners start viewing us differently.
I was going to say, do you think that society thing translates into why husbands are lots of times cheating, sometimes whenever they have young babies at home, even? Because they're all of a sudden like, you're not, now I can't fuck you the way I want to.
Yeah, I think that the inability to reconcile this schism is a lot of the reasons why relationships don't last, or why you break up within 3 years of having a child, because we don't really know how to reconcile that. We don't really know what we're working with. So we make it about a lack of love or something that's missing in the relationship, rather than saying, okay, well, this is something that exists and how can we work to better it?
And do you think sexual fantasies change though? Or do you think that you will always have those? Like, I don't personally have, like, I'm not a very vivid, like, sexual fantasy type of gal. Like, I, as I'm like beet red all of a sudden. But do you think that, like, they really change, or they just change for the person that you're with?
I can speak for myself personally. They've absolutely changed as I've become more self-aware, as I've explored different areas and different facets of my sexuality, as I've become a mom. Like, I feel like my sexual fantasies and what I desire really have shifted. And I think we should make a distinction there between sexual fantasies and desires, because they're actually different things. And I think we really get those a little bit muddled. So a sexual fantasy is something that you think about doing, but you don't necessarily want to enact, that you don't necessarily want to have play out in life. Like one example is a lot of women have the fantasy of being dominated or being, I don't know if I should say it on the podcast, but of being raped per se. Like, it's a fantasy. Does she actually want to be raped? No. What she wants to experience is the feeling of surrender and being taken over by someone else. And she wants to have that experience within herself, but she doesn't actually want to be raped. She just wants to have that dynamic and that energy play out. Does that make sense?
How common is it for that fantasy to exist? Like, is there any sort of statistics or?
I mean, it's really hard to quantify how many people are having these kind of fantasies and how popular they are. But, you know, the most common ones are multi-partner sex, I guess, power control, rough sex. And the fantasies of being forced to have sex, I would say, well, I actually read a statistic from this study done by a guy called Justin Mailer, and he says nearly 2/3 of women and over half of men have the fantasy of being forced to have sex.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, this seems like if you go back to the Armie Hammer's DMs, it seems like some of these started off as innocent and then they just, it's like he kind of pulled out of this thing and then they took like these dark turns. Like at what point, you know, whether you're in the situation physically or maybe you're just talking about it with somebody, like when do you say like, how can you help prepare somebody who maybe like in the situation where like this could be going down a wrong road and like you want to stop before it gets too far? You don't know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I feel like some of these women feel extremely manipulated. That's how they worded it, that they felt manipulated by Armie. So if you are a woman and you're in these like, you know, weird conversations, what's a way to help strengthen your
Lot to say on that actually, because like when I read Armie Hammer's text initially, like maybe a couple of weeks ago when they first came out, I read them as a sex coach and thought, okay, that's like seemed like pretty typical male kind of dominating characteristics, like pretty normal to me, a little bit extreme, but, you know, pretty typical of dommy behavior. And then as you read further and you realize that, you know, there's some consent violations.
Right.
Like the woman says, I wanted him to stop most of the time. Or she refers to having something around her neck during sex as being too much and he carries on. So the thing with BDSM is that there are, what you're doing is you're creating healthy and ethical ways to consensually experience sex and pain. And most of it requires self-knowledge and communication skills and, you know, emotional maturity in order to make sex safe and mutually gratifying. So the problem with what I see with this case is that, you know, it's not so much about the kinks and about the alleged BDSM. It's more that there are consent violations because BDSM is predicated on the fact that you're creating a safe container and creating an environment where you have two mutually consenting adults. And that's not the case with the text thread. You can see that there's, you know, that there's consent violations, and that's the core of the issue here. It's not so much about the kinks because, oh my gosh, there are so many kinks out there and so many different ways of expressing in this human body sexually that, that's not the issue. The issue is that these women weren't consenting. And I looked at Paige, for instance, who's one of the women who have come forward, and there's been multiple women, right, who have come forward and have said, I felt violated, I feel traumatized. And you know that setting wasn't there. So it's not BDSM if it's not there. Then it becomes abuse. Then it becomes traumatic. Then it becomes violation. And so that's like the problem. Drugs, with
alcohol
this.
Played a big part in it with, you know,
I mean,
if there's the drug testing, we're avoiding, and I was able to take this without, and then there's the snorting video, all of those things kind of play into it. But I
absolutely
that maybe it's an ignorant question, but is cannibalism considered a fetish or a kink?
There's definitely a cannibalism fetish. What is interesting about that as a fetish is that it actually has nothing to do with eating another person, right? To eat another person, you essentially, like, you know, that you're going into the death realm, right? So
Hannibal Lecter.
So with cannibalism fetishes, it's predicated on a certain amount of fantasy, and there are like elements to toy around with. Say, you know, you might talk about cutting someone open or even pretend to cut someone open. Or you might talk about turning someone into a piece of meat and cutting into them, but it's you're enacting it. It's you know, you're playing it out. It's not realistic actually, and it's cannibalism fetishes are not about actually eating another.
So what
person.
You're saying is that the bigger issue isn't what these fantasies or this kink portion. It's that he wasn't getting consent while acting out these fantasies that really. He didn't actually want to cut off somebody's toe and keep it in his pocket.
Not necessarily, you know, I don't know, because we're reading a text thread, right?
Right.
And that's the difficult thing with text threads. You're getting a little portion. You don't know what the setup was beforehand. But this is the danger with text messages as well. Like, when do you know? And BDSM is all about creating that safe container and knowing where the limits and where the boundaries are. And if they're in a consensual scene where it's being played out through text and they both know that they're in it, then it can be really fun and playful. Now, if the other person thinks, oh my God, this is getting really serious, he actually wants to do this to me, and if you express that and he continues, that is a consent violation and that is a crossing of boundaries, and that's where it becomes harmful.
Would you advise somebody who's going to go out with a guy and is thinking about maybe having like a one-night stand with somebody to try BDSM, or is that too risky?
No, BDSM. No, absolutely not.
How many times should you sleep with somebody before you go into BDSM? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, BDSM in its purest form, it takes a lot. Like, the people in the BDSM community are the best communicators I know.
Are they mostly married couples?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But there's a community. There's a whole community of them.
There's also clubs.
Yes, absolutely. There's so much to offer. Like, there is so much out there. We see a small slither of it, and I think that's why we're really surprised when we hear cannibalism fetish. But it's a huge community, and the basis of it is consent and creating these safe spaces. And so that takes a skill, a learned skill. You're better off learning from somebody who already knows it. Learning off them and learning the methods of communication. And, you know, like, that self-knowledge part is really important. Like, you can't, if you don't know where your limits and boundaries are as an individual being, how are you going to express that to somebody else? And how are they then going to acknowledge them and respect them? Like, when I think about, okay, in the mainstream, right, like, I guess 50 Shades of Grey really bought.
I was pregnant with like my first, I think, and I was like, what is happening to me? Why
right?
Spice up your love life, Teddy.
Come out. Like, I was like, is it normal that you're like, things change when you're pregnant? Like, all of a sudden you're more like, have more sexual feelings, or
there's a huge, when I'm pregnant, I become massively sexual, not sensual, sexual. Like, I want it big and intense, and you know, I want to be engulfed.
You want to feel
energy.
Small.
Oh yes.
That's what it is. You want to feel small again.
Absolutely. But like, I'm bringing up 50 Shades of Grey because it was so absolutely massive in shaping our sexual norms and mingling sex and violence for the mainstream. And 50 Shades is actually a really poor example of setting up a scene and creating safe boundaries. Like what I said about creating those healthy, ethical, consensual ways to, and using self-knowledge and communication skills, like, that goes out the window with Anna and Christian. Like, Anna says yes to sex when she's uncomfortable because she's too shy to speak her mind, or because she's afraid of losing Christian, or that she gives consent for him to inflict the pain, yet that when he does it, like, she feels harmed by it. So, you know, that is not clean, pure BDSM. That is dangerous BDSM. And that's what we all associate with BDSM. They have that meeting, they write down what she's willing to do, what she's not willing to do. It goes out the window, they do whatever. And she feels violated in a big part of that. And I think we've kind of got the wrong idea about how to set up these safe scenes so that both people mutually pleasured and feel safe.
So if somebody is actually curious about this and they're wanting to, you know, broaden their sexual fantasy or whatever it may be, what are safe ways to learn about it? And so that you don't fall into the trap of, you know, what you saw in 50 Shades of Grey, where you get in a comfortable
I would say getting involved in the community online you know, that's a really great way. Like if you find yourself even having these fantasies and having shame around them and feeling like they're not normal, I'll tell you now, there's a huge community of people online that it is very normal for them, and they've found really healthy ways of experiencing and expressing them. So going online, there's so many resources. There's tons of resources online. And then, you know, I don't know if it's available right now because of COVID, but there are clubs where you can go and they're like kind of dungeon-y kind of spaces, but you can experience like watching somebody being tied up in the Shibari method, you know, and you can see what the process is beforehand that they go through and what signals and communication techniques they have, like to set up that scene and to make it safe. Yeah. So there's plenty in LA actually. And same with flogging or anything like that, that you kind of want to experience or you want more knowledge on, there's a plethora of resources out there online.
I love it.
Do you think that if there was more of a discussion about this, then people would, this wouldn't be such a shock to all of us right now? Like right now, I think he's losing jobs. He is, I don't even know how to express this in the correct way, but like.
Well, he's losing his career, but I mean, to chime in on that answer, just, I think also it's because of the consent thing, right? It goes back to the fact that these women are coming out and saying that they were uncomfortable, they felt manipulated, they felt violated. Yeah.
And they feel traumatized from it.
Traumatized. And if it was a consensual, loving thing that he was having with these several women, then they wouldn't be coming out saying those things.
Exactly. I totally believe that as well. And you know,
and you combine it too, Teddy, with those other things you said too. The videos of him drinking and driving, the videos of him doing other things.
Sending it to other people. Like this getting away from Army, why do men, or maybe women this too, but why do men or women feel the need to send what they're doing to other people?
Ooh. Who is that?
Maybe this willing validation, you know? Validation and acknowledgement.
Without somebody else's consent, like, why is that ever a good idea?
I would say it was never a good idea. Like,
I mean, take a video of yourself drinking and driving. I mean, I don't know. What is he doing bragging about it? It's, I don't know.
So we live in that world now, right? You look at TikTok and Instagram. It's just all out there. Everyone's putting it all out there. And transparency is
second nature. Right. Yeah. I think some people at this point, you're right, they're so familiar with filming themselves nonstop throughout the day. It's just second nature.
Yeah, I think that,
but maybe it is.
And just on that note of alcoholism and drinking and drugs and stuff, you know, you do lose a little bit of discernment when you're under the influence, which is why in BDSM you never participate when you've been drinking or been taking drugs, because it's very hard to acknowledge your own boundaries and that of somebody else's when you're under the influence.
Good idea.
So I think people are like posting when they are under the influence, and so they've lost that sense of discernment of what is right and healthy.
And then Carissa, you were going to ask a question before first break, and don't think I forgot it.
I think I forgot it. What was my question? Oh, how do you feel sexy whenever you're covered in breast milk and spit up?
Asked when we do that, I was like, hold on, where are we going?
I mean, there are seasons for everything, right? I wouldn't say that I felt like my sexiest self when I had, you know, all the bodily fluids and all of that, but I think, and acknowledging that we don't always feel like the full moon in terms of our sexuality, and know that there's waxing and waning with it. When you're breastfeeding, there's a biochemical thing that's going on in the body as well, where all your sex hormones are suppressed because you're producing prolactin for the milk and to produce milk for the baby. So to acknowledge that, to know that, you know, you're not necessarily going to want that hot style of sex that maybe the connection that you're after and the intimacy that you're looking for is more of the warm variety, a little bit more mm-hmm. sensual and a little bit more just being held and and adored, rather than that hot, passionate sex that we all think is the thing yeah. to be vying for all the time.
I do have another question, and I have to ask this because I have this conversation with a lot of my friends, and you know, I've been with my husband for like 13 years. We haven't been married that long, but we've been together for a very long time. So we've obviously had like seasons where it's hot and heavy, seasons where it's not as hot and heavy, and it kind of like ebbs and flows. And one of the things, whenever we ever go through like a lull period where like we haven't been having sex as much as we usually do, it's like getting back on track. Like, what's the, like, is there like a schedule like you should follow to like get you back onto the, like your regular scheduled programming? Do you know what I mean? Like, is there like, what's the best tip to get back on regular scheduled programming whenever you've taken a little break?
Yeah, I think to acknowledge for yourself, like why sex is important in your life, why your relationship is important. And to even like have that conversation with your partner, and then to prioritize it. I mean, we are so busy. There are so many things that we could possibly do in a day that if we just left it up to chance, I think it really gets pushed to the bottom of the list a lot of the time. So it's not about scheduling sex. It's about carving out time to connect with your partner. Mm-hmm. And then through that connection that you carve out, you know, seeing what arises, seeing what wants to be played out, seeing what the dynamic allows for. And it may turn sexy. You never know, but I'm not a huge advocate of like scheduling sex and making sure that you have penetrative sex and you both get off. I'm more about scheduling time just for intimacy and for that connection time. And through that connection, then a lot of the time I find that it's like, you know, you get all those warm, fuzzy feelings and you get to share, you know, what's going on in your inner world, and you feel that connection and it warms your heart and then flows over into other areas of your body and you're open and, you know, want to connect in that way. But, you know, we get pretty swamped by the practical in everything.
Well, I like ending on that positive note. Where do people, I know that you have a great podcast. Can you give us all the info so that people can tune in?
Yeah. So there's the Intimate Knowledge podcast, iHeart Radio podcast that's available on iTunes. But you can find me and all of my work loving Leela. And I have a great course, actually. It's called Living Turned On. It's a really great way for moms and people who are super, super busy to kind of get into their bodies and to tune into themselves. It's really short. It's a short kind of bite-sized course. And I have, lots of stuff coming out as well on my website. So.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem, ladies. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
She was so great.
I know. I did not even realize that cannibalism is considered a kink.
I didn't either. I didn't know that was a real fantasy. I thought that was a death thing.
I thought it was like you get arrested.
I thought that was like, I want to eat you. Like, I want to kill you. Like a, we don't know
you
much.
Know what? I don't think that we're living on the edge as much as.
I don't think we are. I think we need to open our eyes and realize there's a bigger world out there.
There's a bigger world out there. I mean, not to get too personal, but like, even if like Edwin's like too chatty during the business, enough, buddy. I'm good.
Just wait, next time you go, he's gonna be like, I'm gonna take a bite out of your arm, Teddy. You're gonna like it.
Your arm looks delicious. Like, no.
Put some salt and pepper on that elbow, will you?
Definitely ranch dressing downstairs. No. Well, next
if we're not into it now, we probably won't ever get into it.
I've now been in a full sweat even from I'm like
that. I mean, some of that stuff sounds exciting that she was talking about, but not so much the cannibalism.
No, I think I'm good without it. I think I'm good. But to each his own.
To each his own. Just consent, y'all. Consent. Just
consent. But now we have to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about some trends. I didn't even know until the other day skinny jeans are out? What?
Well, I'm not following that. No.
Fine. All right. We'll be right back. Okay, guys, now we are bringing on Nikki and Stacy, who are going to be talking all things mom jeans. Skinny jeans are out. I refuse. We can't do it. We have to talk about everything in regards to all the things that are in and your hilarious TikTok video in some of the comments.
Yes, those comments were some for the books for sure.
All right, guys, tell us about the video. I need to know what inspired it. I need to know why I need to buy these jeans that will.
Well, I actually don't think you should, because I'm going to remain true to my skinny jeans for sure. But Stacy here is the brainchild. And there was something going on with TikTok with side parts and skinny jeans. And one day I was at Ulta in my typical uniform, which is skinny jeans and my side part. And lo and behold, she put up a post on me saying clearly someone didn't get the memo. And then all of a sudden, boom.
Well, I think for some of us, the middle part doesn't work that well. I mean, you said it in your video, but like I have a widow's peak. And so if I have a middle part, it's, and one, bangs are always a mistake. Curtain bangs, you're good after getting it. Like for sure. So like I've never once gotten bangs and gone, you know what? I need to get these again.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I even go so far to say to my hairdresser, when I bring it up to you in a year, say it's a hard no.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
right?
Inevitably I bring it up.
Listen, I think that we should always just like take into consideration our own face shapes, our own body like shape. What body shape, and you always dress for your body, and like you kind of got to ignore trends. Trends are fun for if you want to try something new, then I think don't spend a lot of money on a trend. But I think in general, women should just always dress for their body shape. And a high waisted jean is the only thing I'm wearing since having babies. Probably till the end of time.
A high waisted stretchy jean is my life. I mean, granted, I haven't worn anything with buttons in months, but.
I won't wear jeans without stretch. And I think a lot of the problem with the mom jeans is a lot of them are more rigid. And I prefer to, it's just more comfortable, especially the older you get, just to have a little movement in the jean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're all pretty aware of what we look and feel best in. We kind of have to go with that. But I can't believe some of the other things that are supposedly out as well.
Oh.
All black, everything is out. Well, then I'm 100% out. Because
who said that?
Yeah,
I haven't heard that.
Well, I don't know. I see a whole thing, fashion trends, everyone ditched. I'm like, everyone but Teddy and the others on Teddy Teapot. Right.
Chunky. Oh my God, good to know.
Chunky sneakers out, which I'm fine with.
Yeah. I love a funky sneaker. I was so late to the game on those that I just bought them. I'm not throwing them away yet. I just got them.
No, are you keep the little tag thing on that like all the cool kids do?
Yeah.
Oh, the off-white ones. Yeah.
And I got a little star and glitter on them. I mean, I like them. It just makes me feel young again.
Well, who's wearing heels right now with the pandemic, right?
Yeah,
so the truth is sneakers fit the bill.
Thank you. What she said.
The neon activewear trend ran its course. I still have it all. Aloe's still producing it. I'm purchasing it. Like, I'm not done with it. What do you guys think on that?
Well, I love anything pink. So for me, I found these really cool vintage hot pink track pants when I was walking down Ventura Boulevard one day, and they were bright and I got them, and they're probably super dated, but I love them. So I'm in.
I gotta really look good in it. I mean, it's gotta be something that makes me look real good, because I know that once I put it on, all these eyes are gonna be on me. So if I don't look like an 11, I don't want it.
Thing that is a concern to me is you guys did this cute video. It was funny. You're talking about mom jeans. You're talking about curtain bangs, blah, blah, blah. But the comments that I read are like, people got angry. People are like, you look so much younger with that part. Middle part and baggy jeans look good on, well, that was a compliment, but like, just wear what you like, hair and clothes, exclamation point. Like, why do you have so much rage? Fine.
Just have fun.
Do a zigzag part. It's like,
that was,
I mean, people have so many opinions in regards to how we dress, how we look, what makes us feel the best. Why is that? And why do we listen?
I think it struck a nerve with a lot of people. Listen, we know that we live in a pretty ageist society and world where youth is revered. And so I think when people are sort of poking them at like, whoa, you're, what you're doing is making you seem older, I think it just, it offended a lot of people and it struck a nerve with them.
And actually another thought is, if you think about it, I think a lot of times we actually dress for women, right? For other women to compliment us, to say something nice. So I think if you looked at the majority of the compliments and the comments and the negative statements, it was largely female.
It was almost all female.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting because, you know, a lot of times what we think looks good and super stylish, there's no way a guy's gonna think it looks hot, right? Mm-hmm. It's gonna be our friends be like, oh, those sunglasses, which are so big, look so chic. Whereas my ex-husband used to say to me, you should only be wearing aviators. I'm gonna throw your glasses away. So it's the women who weigh in.
Oh, Teddy and I have already vented about this earlier.
Oh, yeah. We're like, what is happening that anytime we think we look our best, our husbands are like, nah, way. When we're at our worst, they're compliment central. But I don't even think it's really about like chasing youth or wanting to be a millennial or any of those types of things. I think women want to dress in what they their best foot forward and whatever's going to make them feel most confident. And I don't know that it's necessarily an age thing. Like, I'm definitely not going to like wear those thick socks over my sweatpants and like try to do all that because it's not who I am in general, but it's not because I feel like I'm too old to do it.
Oh, I have things I feel like I'm too old to do.
Well, what about jean shorts?
I still wear.
So I love my jean shorts still, and I am pushing 50. So I think there is some real concern when I show up at my kids' football game and I'm in my jean shorts. So do we think that that's something that should be kind of put away as we tip the scale on the age? We're older than you guys.
Do you guys want to know an embarrassing story regarding jean shorts? So when I first my tape for Housewives, I wore these little booty jean shorts because I was like, I want to get, you know, I was like trying to cause a stir. And I was like, I'm going to wear these ridiculous platforms and jean shorts while I'm taking care of my kids to like make a splash. Like, this is just for the, you know, the original tape.
Right.
They used it in my first episode.
Oh my God.
Did they really? So you made your statement that it worked.
Oh, like
it worked.
The bottom of my butt crack was almost hanging out. That's how short, like I was like, this is a situation. Like why, and that from that day on, I was like, okay, I'm no longer going to like, I'm out.
So have you worn them since?
They don't fit anymore.
Okay, but like jean shorts, like to run out on us. Well, I guess none of us get to go out
or
as much.
If you're on vacation.
But on vacation, like if going to the beach or to the pool.
I'm not anti jean shorts. It just depends on the style. I don't necessarily love like the booty short ones, like Teddy was describing. She wore with her platforms.
We need to see that. We gotta go back and look at that now.
But I'm not anti them, especially in LA, because it's just such a beautiful weather year round that I feel like you got to have variety in your closet. So you got to have some shorts, you know, because it gets hot.
It also depends what you're wearing on top too.
Yes. You got to keep it chic on
top.
It's all
balanced. Correct.
If you wear like a button up, a nice, like loose button up, I think that's hot.
I don't think it's so much about age as much of like, we all know our bodies and what looks best on our own bodies or we feel more comfortable. And so, for example, you know, back in the day, I used to wear really low-waisted jeans. You probably don't even know Frankie B. They were these like amazing low jeans. Well, there is no version where I can wear low jeans now. Like it's high-waisted all the way, hold it in. Like, so I think it also has to be.
I fully agree. And where do people watch this video of you so that we can all go down the same exact rabbit hole that I did, where I had to Google the best mom jeans? Stretch. Can I start parting my hair back into the center? Like, what's your TikTok names?
It's called Like Love Lose. So So it started like what we like, what we love, and what we're going to lose. And the lose is always like
Dry January.
Mm. All your Apple subscriptions that you're overpaying for.
It
was really more entertainment for us as we're sitting here during this pandemic.
Well, yeah.
I love it.
So truthfully.
Thanks you guys for joining us. And next, when everything opens back up, we got to get the lady sitter. We'll all have some drinks.
Sounds good. Thanks for having us.
Alrighty. Thank you guys.
Bye guys.
Bye.
All right, Carissa. So now that it's just us, what are we going to close out talking about?
Well, I think we should start with Wendy.
We should talk. Did you watch?
I watched the movie.
You watched the Lifetime movie, not the documentary.
Yes, I haven't got a chance to see the documentary yet, but the Lifetime movie was good.
I didn't watch the Lifetime movie. I watched the documentary.
Oh, great. This is perfect. This is perfect.
But like, okay, so these are the things that we know. All right. One, like, power to her for doing this. But like, there was something, like, she was on a chaise lounge the entire time during the documentary with like leg compression, like things on, like maybe drinking a glass of champ. Like, it was a very,
okay.
Like, setup was like not what I was ready for in regards to like where you're going to like share all of your deepest, darkest secrets.
She is definitely not afraid to share. Did she just go there? Did she share everything?
She shared everything. I mean, there were some parts that were a little bit fuzzy to me. Like, she went into like a treatment center. Like, remember when she fainted on her show? But then she said, you know, it was kind of BS being there because I'm not an addict. And
right.
So stuff like that. So she shared that. So, but like, I kind of wanted more info on the show, on the leaving, that type of stuff. But she did share a lot about her childhood. And like, she's had like weight issues her whole life.
Yeah, her parents don't sound so nice. Oh my gosh.
I mean, her parents like creating like an eating disorder at a young age and all types of things. So that was definitely hard to watch. But then there were parts that I watched that like, showed her when she was working at the radio stations, and she was saying things like, you know, I had to do coke 5 nights a week because I worked the night, you know, like all, but she's just so matter of fact about it. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, wow. But she did this interview with Whitney Houston where you're like, only Wendy could have gotten this interview.
Oh, 100%. I remember that. She is definitely the one thing that I take away is just like, she's a hustler. She believes in herself. And she really, even though she was married to Kevin, it sounds like she just did everything by herself, for herself, like with no help of anybody. And yeah, she took a weird path to get there, but man, her hustle is so admirable. Like, I just walk away and I think like, I don't know. It's different. She's definitely made her money and her name off of like a scandalous way of being the girl that like, she was revolutionary whenever she started like telling everybody's gossip. And now it's like, everybody does that. You know, everybody talks about everybody's gossip. We talk about everyone's gossip. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, she definitely started this whole thing that she deserves a lot of credit for. But then as with all these people that become uber famous, do you just leave feeling like, at least with the film I did, it just felt sad.
Felt sad at the end. And I think
that
is the hard thing. And I watched this other movie last night, this other documentary called Fake Famous about influencers, and it's not the same, but there is something that's tied to fame, that is tied to being in the public eye, that no matter how authentic and how straightforward and no matter how you can be, it can really suck you up and chew you up and honestly break your heart.
Well, tell me, because you grew up not with a famous father, but you didn't necessarily spend all your time in LA and in the forefront. You still were able to have a very normal childhood. But then, you know, your life dramatically probably changed, obviously, after Real Housewives. I mean, and
yeah.
Did it feel like it changed?
I think it didn't.
And do you feel lonelier or do you feel more fulfilled after?
It really comes in waves. I think that because there were so, when I came out here and I wanted to be an actress and I had all these big dreams and they were crushed, like right at the beginning. I mean, I've told this story before, but like I went in on an audition and they said I got the callback, and then before the callback, they called the manager and they said, like, you need to lose weight if we're going to hire you. And I just remember having so much like, I'm done with this. I don't ever want to put myself in the public eye again. And then, you know, 20 years later, whatever it was, Housewives presented itself to me. And there were parts that were really fun and great about it. But, you know, I'm seeing they're all away on their trip right now. And I know what those trips are. And like I know how
bad or good
that is. I know we have some fun, but you know, when you're on those trips, like you are nonstop 24/7 and it is brutal. And me sitting here, it's like last night I'm cuddled up with my kids watching Cobra Kai thinking, gosh, I don't have to try to spark a ton of drama. You know, like I don't have to come for someone right now. Like, and I'm not saying that it's made up, but like when you live your life in front of the public eye and you have to feel your full emotions, where like in your day-to-day life, you don't necessarily have to do that. Like I can get annoyed by stuff or annoyed by a friend and go, whatever, because I don't have a camera watching me.
Such a good point.
Like you can.
So, yeah. But whenever, that's what makes a good reality show. You have to like every little thing that maybe just kind of annoys you in that in an everyday person like me, like my husband does something that pisses me off and I probably will just like, whatever, sweep it under the rug. I'll deal with it tomorrow or I'll just let it go. You can't, because if you don't confront it with a friend or a spouse, then you're missing a moment that could be making compelling television. When you have compelling television, you have high ratings. When you have high ratings, you get higher checks. It's a job, you know, it all comes back down into a big circle.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really is, it's an internal struggle because I want something else. I know that I want to be able to authentically be who I am and not live one foot in, one foot out, if that makes any sense, on the life that I actually live, but I don't know what it is. And so I think that coming through that is something there's been hard days, but I don't know if it's because of Housewives or because of a childhood dream that I've always had.
Yeah.
And like you touch it, but not in the way you originally wanted to touch it.
And you're still trying to figure out what exactly that dream is now. Yeah. Trust me. God, I feel very, I connect with you on that. Because you have these things that you think you're going to do and you don't know, but then you grow and you have experiences on television or whatever. Ever as Wendy did in different ways. And you realize like, maybe that's not as glamorous as I thought it was going to be, or maybe that's not exactly what I thought I wanted to do. Now I'm older, I'm wiser. And also I have children now. So my priorities are different. You know, maybe I don't want to always be in LA. Like all these these conversations are constantly going on in your head. Sorry, I don't know how I turned that back around. But
it's like, even a good place to like kind of end on, but I think that is a huge, I think as kids, I kind of thought that I was going to grow up and then I would make this decision for my life. And that was going
right.
to be my life.
Exactly.
I realized that every single year I was going to want to push for more. That complacency is where I'm my most unhappy. Like that I have to continue like pushing my boundaries, figuring out what I want next, trying to fight for things. Being rejected, all mm-hmm. of those things are part of what makes us who we are and better at what we do.
Exactly right. And you're totally right. You think when you're young that you're going to have one job and you're going to do that till you retire, and then you're going to vacation and travel with your husband while your kids are grown and have grandbabies. Like you have this picture, but it just doesn't feel like the hustle never
stops. No, and then I'm like, I'm a hustler, baby.
Yeah. Now, when can we be as rich as Wendy Williams?
That's pretty nice. Marissa, I could talk to you for hours. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope that we can come on and do this together again.
I would love to. I love chatting with you.
Where do our teapotters find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Carissa Culliner, and you can watch Daily Pop. It's live every day at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Perfect. Bye.
Bye, honey.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to Teddy Teapot on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.